K-Mud Podcast presents.
Welcome to another Tuesday edition of Wildcraft at our new time slot here, 2:30 in the afternoon until 4 o'clock I'll be with you. So I want to apologize right away for saying I wanted to find a specialist to talk to you about porcupines today, but I did not. But I did a ton of homework about porcupines for you, and there's so much to discuss that we're just going to get right into it. I'm going to start by letting you know that the information I'm about to share came from a website called scenichudson.org and from the Ologies podcast with Allie Ward. This interview with Tim Bean of Cal Poly San Luis Obispo. You can always look that up. It was the February 19th, 2025 edition of Ologies. That's like the word biology with the bio cut out, just Ologies. And that one was about porcupines specifically. That show is always about something super interesting and you never know what. So here's the information I've gleaned about porcupines for you today. And I also have some, I have an article I'm going to share with you as well that discusses what the Karuk tribe of the Klamath River and the Salmon River have been doing with porcupine quills since time immemorial. So let's start with the beginning. Porcupines are North America's second largest rodent. Beavers are the largest. And the porcupine is also closely related to a sloth. So they're slow and methodic like a sloth. It's just that they evolved quills instead of camouflage, but that is why they are so chill, just moseying around after dark because they are nocturnal. Moseying around all super chill, chewing on wood. Just really relaxed little guys, unless you make them mad. So let's talk more about that. Okay, so porcupines can weigh up to 35 pounds. And like beavers, porcupines eat the inner bark from trees, but their favorite foods are fresh young leaves and fruits. I'm going to tell you more about why that's so adorable, but here we go. Let's stay on task. I'm just too excited. Porcupines are so adorable. I might even have to stop explaining porcupines mid-discussion and play you some sounds because you will not believe the sounds porcupines make. It's just insanity. But okay, back to work. Here we go. Porcupines have over 30,000 quills, and in fact, recent scientists have counted more than 40,000 quills. So that's a lot of quills, and each quill is 1 to 4 inches long. They're made of keratin, like the substance found in your fingernails or in insects and mushrooms and your hair. What's interesting about these quills, a lot of things are interesting, but one of the things that's super interesting about porcupine quills is that they also have hundreds of tiny barbs facing backwards on them. So the barbs help those quills travel deeper and deeper into the skin of the victim. It's important to remove a porcupine quill as soon as possible if you get one in your skin or if your dog gets one in their skin, or hopefully they never do, but if they do, definitely remove as many of them as you can. If they got into the dog's mouth or into the dog's eye, then it's important to take them to the vet. But otherwise, the vet's going to do what you're going to do. Pull them out. So pull them out. because they will travel deeper and deeper and deeper and cause serious infection. Although, this is interesting, the infection won't be from how dirty the quills are because porcupine quills contain antibacterial properties. Scientists think this is because porcupines poke themselves all the time. Isn't that hilarious? Oh my gosh, I feel so sad for them. Stuck in a world where you can poke yourself by your own quills just from falling out of a tree. This is what happens. The sweet little porcupine is like, ooh, the branches have all the sweetest leaves right at the tip where the branches are like the thinnest and the hardest to climb out on. I only weigh 30 pounds. I'm just going to go try to reach out for that. And they reach out to the very end of that branch and then they fall to the ground and impale themselves. And then they spend the afternoon pulling their own quills out of themselves so they can get back to work. But don't worry, those quills grow back, just like your hair grows back. So that's kind of cool. On average, porcupines can live 5 to 7 years, but some have been known to reach up to 20 years in captivity. I do want to take this moment to point out that it is illegal in North America to keep a wild animal as a pet, and wild animals belong in the wild. It is always better to leave a wild animal alone and enjoy it from a distance. If you are so lucky that you get to see a porcupine, it'll probably be nighttime, first of all. And second of all, you're going to want to be behind the safety of your windshield, or at least like 10 feet away. But you know what? I got more details for you about them, because they don't shoot their quills. They can raise them up in the air to really intimidate you and be like, you better not get any closer because I got all these quills. And they make a cool noise when they shake them all around. But they don't like shoot them like Sonic the Hedgehog does on the TV show or the video game, if you know what I'm talking about. That's not real. They do not shoot their quills, but they have this muscle around the quill. And when the muscle is activated, like if the porcupine is bumped into, that muscle lets go of the quill, and that's how it ends up in you instead of in them. Okay. Females. Female. This is crazy. Be so happy you are not a female porcupine, because females are fertile once a year for 6 to 12 hours. It is the shortest of any rodent, and their gestation is 210 days or 7 months. Typically, they deliver one offspring. It's called a porcupette. Porcupette. They're born with soft quills, so the mom doesn't have to worry about that. They harden after a couple hours. But what is so lame is that a female porcupine is either pregnant or nursing 11 out of 12 months of every year as soon as she reaches fertility stage. So, and there's one more thing about being a female porcupine that isn't that great. here, let's talk about it. Let's talk about that. Okay, so porcupines emit a pungent odor likened to the smell of stinky cheese or maybe dank buds or maybe smelly pits, depending on what your olfactory nerves have to say about it. That smell is to let fishers and cougars and owls and coyotes know that they're serious about defending themselves, and they use that scent as well to tell each other where they are. Like when a female starts to go into heat, the male can smell her from super far away, and then the males start trotting through the forest one after the other, all trying to be the first one to get there at literally 2 miles an hour, looking for that lady. They can find her by smelling her with their sweetie sweet noses. They've got pretty big noses, not very good eyesight. Anyway, so the males are looking for the female. They might battle. They might share some quills between them. And the male that wins the battle walks right up to the female and scents all over her. And that is what releases her body to go into estrus, or to be ready to go into heat. So she's standing around waiting to get peed on. Ugh. Anyway, they're still adorable. And they make porcupettes. How could that not be adorable? But this would be a reason why a porcupine might not be a lovely pet to have, because they smell bad and they like to spray on stuff. So besides being, pokey, there's that. They're also shy and nocturnal creatures. That one other thing about this like whole defending themselves is that they can use their tail like a mace, like a big old axe. They swing around covered in spikes. They just, wagging their tail around towards their enemy when they see somebody they don't want around. Okay, but overall, when they're not needing to defend themselves, porcupines are shy and they're nocturnal creatures. They don't hibernate, but they spend much of their time in trees searching for food and sometimes nesting in branches, and the soles of their feet are kind of pebbly, kind of like a basketball, because they use those feet to hold on to the trees, right? So they are excellent climbers, except for when they climb out too far and fall. Porcupines, like I said, are herbivores. They eat needles and bark from evergreen trees in the winter, and berries and seeds and fruits and grasses and leaves during the warmer months. They're especially fond of water lilies, and they swim into ponds to munch on them. Porcupines are nearsighted and slow-moving, again, like a sloth, able to reach the big speed of 2 miles an hour compared to squirrels who can run 20 miles an hour, and a deer can run 30, but they don't need to run fast because they smell bad and they're covered in spikes. So that's their protection, right? The males also use their excellent sense of smell to find the females. We talked about that. I guess the last thing I want to mention about them is that porcupets, the babies, make a cooing noise, almost like a chipmunk sound, when they're nursing to help their mother release milk. And in captivity, this sound continues throughout their adult life when they've been fed something they consider a treat, which makes sense because they're like, this tastes really good and sweet, kind of like mom's milk. So in the wild, you might never hear a porcupine make the sounds I am about to play for you. But you have to hear these sounds because they're insanely amazing. So there's this famous porcupine on YouTube, and I don't know if it's still alive because these YouTube videos are kind of old. Some of them say 14 years old. So I don't know if Teddy is still alive, but there is a famous porcupine online and his name is Teddy Bear. And if you want to find him, you could probably just type in Teddy the porcupine, but also the YouTube person is called Zooniversity One, if you want to find them that way as well. So I had a really hard time choosing which video of Teddy the porcupine to play for you. So I found one that's kind of a compilation that makes some of his sounds. So this is when Teddy is eating things that his owner, care provider, who found him injured and couldn't release him again, has been feeding him, like pumpkins and corn. So you will hear the caregiver speaking to him. So ignore the human voice and just listen to how amazing Teddy is. Let's see. Here you go. The first one is him eating corn. You won't believe it. I swear he's talking. See if you believe me. See if you believe me, folks. See if you agree with me. Okay, let's see. Here we go.
Can you share your corn with me? Can I have it? No. Let me have it. You won't share? Oh, really?
Did you hear that? I swear he just said, "I like that." And he says, "It's mine. It's mine. I like that." I swear this is a porcupine talking. It blows my mind. I'm going to skip ahead a little bit in this video because at one point she gives him some pumpkins and I just cannot believe how happy he is. It's so adorable. Here we go.
Pick it up. Can you get it? Pick it up. Good boy. Oh, what is it, Teddy? Pumpkin? Can you say pumpkin? Is that pretty good?
Okay, I don't know how much longer you want to hear Teddy talking with his caregiver, so I'll stop it. But can you believe those sounds? Like I said, those are the sounds that usually in the wild a porcupet, a baby porcupine, would make to tell mama to release more milk. It's super sweet and yummy and I want more. And I don't know, anybody who's a mom out there might know when your baby makes a noise, you can feel it. So I thought that was the cutest noise of all time, and I just thought I'd share that with you. So if you haven't seen this video of Teddy Bear, it's worth the checking out. But also, in case you don't have that capability, I want you to know that Teddy has two giant front teeth, just like a beaver, and they're bright orange like a beaver. And that is a special coating that both beavers and porcupines have that help them eat away at the bark to get to the inner part of a tree. Next we're going to talk about why there's not as many porcupines in our community as there used to be. But what you should know is that porcupines are pretty prevalent all over the northern United States. So they live in a lot of different places all over this country, all over this continent. But I'm going to read a little article for you now because I feel like this gives us some pertinent information. This was from a Cal Poly Humboldt study from 2017. It says, in California, we know little about porcupine's historical or current status. Maps of porcupine distribution conflict considerably. For much of the 1900s, foresters and farmers primarily treated porcupines as pests because of their undesirable damage they inflict by feeding on trees and gnawing on man-made items in search of salt. Oh yes, they love salt. All mammals need salt. Porcupines are just like anybody else. They love salt. You could maybe be more likely to see a porcupine or perhaps an elk or deer by putting a salt lick out in your yard and putting a camera on it, see what happens. But anyway, more recently, porcupines have been recognized for their role as engineers, contributing important structure and diversity to forest ecosystems. They are also prey for the endangered fisher. I don't know how the fisher does it. Boy, I would love to know more about how a fisher, an endangered species in our community, right? Like weasel-y guy. It's his favorite food, porcupine. I did watch a video of an African porcupine getting hunted in the wilds of Africa. And when the person ate some, as it was a gift from the people he was staying with, and you don't say no to food that someone hands you when they're grateful enough to let you know you share their home. So he tasted this porcupine and he said it was just like eating bacon fat, like all fat. The whole porcupine maybe is just a big jelly roll. So so maybe that's why fishers and cougars and owls and everybody loves them so much. But number one predator of a porcupine is the fisher. So when the porcupines are on the decline, the fisher is on the decline as well. So that's interesting information. We have data on porcupines in the northern half of California since the beginning of the 20th century. There have been 363 records of porcupines located in Northern California from 1908 until 2016. Now, partially that's going to be because they're nocturnal. Partially it's going to be because most people don't want to see a porcupine because you can't get hurt by them if you don't even see them, right? But also, I think as you can imagine, what they feed on might make some people less likely to want them as somebody in their yard or on their tree farm, right? And we're going to keep talking about that. Porcupines have adapted specialized feeding strategies, allowing them to survive periods of harsh weather and low food availability. In the summer, porcupines selected willow-dominated swales, marshes, and fruit trees, and during the winter, they selected coastal scrub, dunes, and conifer forests. These changes were most likely driven by forage availability, and they lost dramatic body weight between summer and winter. On average, females lose 7.5% of their mass, and males 17.8% of their mass in the winter. 4 out of 5 mortalities occurred during the winter. Okay. Porcupines love salt, and trees from nurseries have been fed with fertilizers with high saline content. As for putting chicken wire around, the trees don't bother. Porcupines may look clumsy, but they have no trouble scaling fences. Porcupines in the Midwest are known to chew on wires under vehicles due to road salts building up under their car. Oh, we're going to run out of time. Okay, one more article about porcupines. The High Country News magazine I found online had an article called The West's Vanishing Porcupines. The article is written by Shi N. Kim. On November 24th, 2025, scientists are racing to figure out why porcupines are disappearing from their former stomping grounds. So elusive are the porcupine that few people have ever seen one in the wild. Emilio Tripp, a wildlife manager and citizen of the Karuk tribe in Northern California, might have been one of the lucky ones. On a nighttime drive with his father in the late 1990s, a ghostly silhouette flashed by the window. That's the only time I ever thought I saw one, he recalled decades later. Tripp still can't say for sure whether it was a kashyp, the Karuk word for porcupine, but he holds onto the memory like a talisman. Porcupine encounters are rare amongst his tribe, and the few witnesses seem to fit a pattern. Almost all of them are elders, and they fondly remember an abundance of porcupines until the turn of the century. Now each new sighting rings like an echo from the past. A carcass on a road, a midnight run-in. The tribe can't help but wondering, where did all the porcupines go? Everyone's concerned, Tripp said. Even if there were more observations, we'd hear about it. Porcupines are walking pincushions. We've talked about what we know about them. I'm trying to get to the part I know I'm running short on time, folks. I'm skipping through. Tasha Tripp, the Karuk Yarok, weaves a basket during a ceremony, during a community basket gathering. Porcupine quills are traditionally used in Karuk basketry to add yellow coloration and are also used in cultural and ceremonial items by several tribes throughout the region. Porcupines are culturally important to the Karuk tribe, whose members weave quills into cultural ceremonial items such as baskets, but these days the tribe imports quills more often than it harvests them. That's more than just an inconvenience. Not being able to gather quills locally constitutes a form of lost connection between tribal members and their homelands. It's important for porcupines to be a part of our landscape. That's part of why they've been chosen for these ceremonial items, Tripp said. Eric Beaver, an ecologist at the U.S. Geological Survey, worries that the Great Porcupine Vanishing Act points to a broader trend. Across the country, biodiversity is declining faster than scientists can track it. The porcupine might just be one example of what Beaver calls the silent erosion of animal abundance. But no one really knows what's going on, Beaver said. We're wondering whether the species is either increasing or declining without anyone even knowing. Scientists are racing to fill this knowledge gap. Bean and his team combed through centuries' worth of public records to map porcupine distribution patterns in the Pacific Northwest. Roadkill databases, wildlife agency reports, and citizen science hits reveal that porcupines are dwindling in conifer forests but popping up in non-traditional habitats such as deserts and grasslands. Beaver is now leading a similar study across the entire western U.S. Concerned scientists have several theories about why porcupines have not returned to their former stomping grounds. Here we go. Illegal marijuana farms, which are often tucked away in forests, use rodenticides that kill many animals, including porcupines, while increased protection for apex predators like mountain lions may have inadvertently increased the decline of porcupines. On top of all of this, porcupines have low reproduction rates, birthing only a single offspring at a time. I guess I'll jump in here and say, please don't use rodenticide. You're killing so many things if you do, including rodents like porcupines, who are vitally important to our ecosystem, and also the sweet little, what are those rats called that live in the dens? Oh, geez. Oh, I lost it. I'm going back to the article. Anyway, rodenticide is evil, evil. A porcupine and her porcupet were shown crossing a road in a picture I'm looking at, but you cannot see. Understanding porcupine distribution isn't easy. Porcupines are generalists, inhabiting a wide variety of forest types, so it's challenging for research to know where to look. As herbivores, porcupines aren't easy to bait either. Scientists experiment with using brine-soaked wood blocks, peanut butter, and even porcupine urine to coax the curious critters towards cameras, but with mixed success. It's a mystery, says John Buckley, the centers of the Central Sierra Environmental Resource Center in Sierra Nevada. He says, we still don't understand why they're not reproducing and filling back in where there's very little disturbance in their habitat, like Yosemite National Park. The Karuk tribe is eager to bring porcupines back, but first the tribe needs to figure out where healthy porcupine populations may already exist. Years of camera trap surveys have turned up scant evidence of the creature's presence. One area that Tripp considers a hotspot had photographed a single porcupine. That's how rare they are, Tripp said. So Karuk biologists are considering other methods, including trained dogs, to conduct scat surveys. Reintroducing the species would require a delicate balancing act. Porcupines are already scarce, and it's unclear whether already small source populations could afford to lose a few more. Still, Tripp feels like it's time to act, since the ecosystem doesn't appear to be healing on its own. Things don't seem to be getting better in the course of my lifetime, Tripp said. Yet his actions betray some lingering optimism. Tripp, his wife, and his daughter still regularly attend basket weaving events involving quills, doing their part to uphold the Karuk's age-old traditions that honor the porcupine. It's a small act of stubborn hope that perhaps in a few years, the tribe will be able to welcome the porcupine home. All right, again, that article was, where's the top? High Country News. The West Vanishing Porcupines. I was really impressed to see that they were interviewing members of the Karuk tribe about that, and I felt like it was, if not as good as an interview, pretty good. I actually have reached out to the Karuk tribe to see if they would like to talk with me about any other animals, and a few other folks out there, including the Sinkione Intertribal Wilderness Council. So I'm hoping to hear back from some new guests soon about getting more folks on the air to chat with me about animals and plants. In the meantime, I hope you enjoyed listening to that article and information about porcupines. And that was all sparked because about a year ago, I got a text in the middle of the night when I was away from home visiting family, and it was a picture from my partner of a porcupine that he saw on Shelter Cove Road, and it just scaled straight up the side of a super steep cliff and ran off into the woods. He saw it just barely a few seconds and caught a couple pictures, and it was really cool to know there are a few porcupines in our woods around here. And I have heard from many a folk who've lived here longer than I that porcupines used to be way more abundant in our community, and often people's dogs came home quilled all the time, actually. And part of that is the rodenticides. Part of that may be that as the forests get thicker and thicker with overabundant trees, the underbrush gets so thick that the porcupines can't squeeze in between and walk around in their little waddle that they do. They're kind of getting pushed out by the thick underbrush. So porcupines love to eat wood, but if they can't even get into the woods, they're going to have to move on. So anyway, rodenticide evil, porcupines awesome. I hope you enjoyed that. And this is just another example of one of the many animals that live in your community that are valuable to the world and that we need to keep entertaining the idea of protecting and figure out what we can do to make life better for porcupines nationwide, because you've never heard an animal so adorable.
This has been a K-Mite podcast. To listen to other shows and more episodes of this show, find us on all the platforms where you get your podcast, and also on our website, kmud.org.